This week's Spurs Show is brought to you to celebrate Rick Johnson's 60th birthday, and also by the Pocketbook of Spurs by Martin Cloak, crammed full of rare pictures, exclusive illustrations, and the history of the Lilywhites. Available now at visionsp.co.uk. No sound of Harry Redknapp, no sound of Phil Cornwall. It's me, Mike Lee, sitting in the leatherette chair that is normally sat upon by Phil Cornwall. Unfortunately, Phil's partner's not very well. Phil can't join us, so apologies to you listeners out there. You've got me. Before I introduce my two esteemed guests helping me out tonight, I'd like to say thank you very much and happy birthday to Rick Johnson, one of the sponsors of tonight's show, who is 60 on the 24th of November. This show is a gift from Sally, your partner. According to Sally, Rick is always ready if called to action. Many years ago, while in the forest, Sally sat on a bee and Rick sucked out the sting after she dropped her trousers. So unfortunately, he did this as a party of school children appeared and they uttered to their teacher, "Miss, there's a man over there and he's sucking a lady's bum." Although from Manchester, Rick has supported the Spurs since 1968 when he moved to London and was taken down to White Hart Lane. The atmosphere was so fantastic, he was hooked. Sally met him in 1976 at the end of his hippie period, when he lived in a squat, rode a motorbike, and spent most of the day in bed. Nowadays, he's bade farewell to the squat and the motorbike, but not lounging in bed all day. Thankfully, his love for Spurs outweighed his other pursuits over the years, one of which included Morris dancing. Sally, his partner, was in fact an Arsenal fan when they met, but she converted to the Spurs and now recognises the devious way of the scum. Rick is responsible for opening up her life to the frustration of being a Spurs fan, but she's very glad they met and have shared some wonderful times together. Happy birthday, Rick. Also, happy birthday from Jane and Martin from the Royston branch. They promise you a win on Sunday against Wigan. Thank you very much. I'd now like to welcome my two guests. We have director Theo Delaney and author of the Pocketbook of Spurs, Martin Cloak. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Hi there. And happy birthday, Rick.
Happy birthday, Rick. What a nice gift to someone to go, I've bought you a Spurs show.
And what a touching story about the bum sucking as well.
Nice.
I thought, yeah.
Yeah, that was the cleanest story she sent me.
Was it?
Yeah. Exactly. but it's nice.
I can't follow it, really.
Yeah. But it's a nice thing, sort of birthday, whatever, to go there. You know, you used to be in the programme. You used to, you know, whatever, your dad and all that. And you sort of keep
Are you thinking, Mike, it's an idea that others might want
to think
about.
Yeah, email us spursshow@gmail.com if you want a loved one to be a sponsor of the show.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, it's been International Week. There's been obviously no Spurs game, but obviously we've had some Spurs players appearing.
Yeah.
Last weekend,
an inordinate amount in the England team.
You know, England aren't going to win the World Cup when you see Huddleston. I mean, bless him, striding on in midfield. Did you both watch
Lumbering.
The game?
I must admit, I was totally underwhelmed by the internationals this week, so I grabbed a look at some highlights, but that's about it.
Really. Yeah, I saw it, but it was underwhelming to watch. It was difficult to... I wasn't exactly glued to it. It was on in the corner.
Yeah.
But I did... I mean, Darren Bent, at least we can be pleased. I mean, I like Darren Bent.
He didn't get
actually,
the service,
I should say.
Yeah.
I like Darren Bent, but... he had a terrible time. Sean Wright Phillips in the first half was one of the worst performances that I've ever seen. Genus, in fact, was not by his own standards. It wasn't that bad. I mean, he put in an incredible shift in terms of work rate.
He always does.
Yeah.
Did you hear the commentator, his distribution, his creativity, when he burst forward and went backwards. The commentator said, "Why isn't he?"
That's what we watch. He beats a couple of players, approaches the final third, then literally does a U-turn, turns back, and looks for a pass to a defender. That's what he did. But so then, I don't know, it was 18 minutes to go. We'd been pretty much outplayed by a Brazil team in third gear, and I'm thinking, I think I even tweeted, "Get Jermaine Defoe on, get the HUD on, get Crouch on."
Well, they listened to you.
And they did. Brought them all on.
The power of Twitter.
And nothing changed at all in terms of our
Twitter.com. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/Spurs Show.
Yeah.
You can tweet us there. And did you see the Republic of Ireland France game?
I did. I watched that as well.
Big chance.
Well, the great thing is because, of course, in my house with my wife, I've got two daughters and a wife. So they are glued to Strictly and X Factor. So it's brilliant. I just slip into the other room and I watched all the football live.
You've got the two Sky boxes, have you?
I have. Hey. Well, it's Virgin Media, actually.
Oh, is it? There we are.
But, Ireland, again outclassed. But yeah, that's predictable. I mean, that was only, it was always going to happen. You just look at the two lineups. My God. Mm. I mean, Robbie Keane also, as we all know, is not what he once was. He might have made a difference a couple of years
ago. Do you think they've got
ago.
A chance on Wednesday, tomorrow night in Paris?
They've got a tiny chance.
It might have actually, in a strange way, been better than losing the first leg, because maybe the French would be a little bit complacent. You know, the Irish fighting spirit.
I'd like to see
bringing
it.
The cliches in here a little
though.
Bit. But,
the French are missing some players.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, two or three players through injury. But my God, there's a big golfing class.
There is a big golf.
France would have to play real bad.
Mm. I agree. I think it's slightly, I mean, I know there's a lot of talk about unfair, the seeding that France are playing Ireland. I also think it's quite unfair with, again, with, let's be honest, I know it's the World Cup, but a lot of rubbish that gets through from the other continents that get yeah. in and better.
Are you
better
thinking
countries.
New Zealand?
Well, there's one for yeah. a start. And,
yeah. I mean, Ireland would beat New Zealand, wouldn't
they? But this is it. And you sort of think, okay, I know the World Cup should, but there should almost be a sort of pre-World Cup for teams like
the
a sort
argument
of playoff.
Is that they gain experience, but you wonder how much experience you gain.
I know it's all about. I know it's all about the money.
Really in these, yeah. in the that's stage, one argument. That's the other argument is it's FIFA's job to spread the word of football globally, and if those if continents are underrepresented or not represented at all, then the word's not going to spread in those places. It's such a massive big deal for a country like New Zealand or for a small African country.
I think it's a better way of doing it. Maybe having more teams in the World Cup finals.
Well, there's 32. But
have the first one, have 64, and the first game, even seeded, is a one-off like knockout thing. No two legs. Right. As a one-off. So you do get Ireland playing New Zealand. So actually, it's done actually in the country that the World Cup's taking part.
So you quickly get down to
32.
So
you get more fans going. It's more money coming in. More people coming to see the games.
And those games are seeded. So that you end up with 32, probably 32 strong
even
teams.
Even stronger sides.
And a couple of giant killers. Yeah.
Because the thing is with those group games, you know, don't lose your first game. You can... Well, I remember one season Italy with Cameroon, it was 82. I think they drew all three first games and still scraped through and went on to win it.
Won it, in 82,
So
well, it could be a little bit more up for grabs next summer anyway, because the big hitters from Europe and South America are off their own continent as well. So it's going to be, you never quite know how that's going to affect people.
And it might be the time for an African team to really go along.
But
way.
Then the big African teams are from the north of the continent,
it's
down south
years,
as well, so...
I think
it could be quite interesting.
We always say the Africans could go a long way. You're right, we say it every 4 years. But it's different now in as much as African football has continued to progress, so it's stronger than it's ever been. If you look at the lineups of teams like Cameroon and Ivory Coast, they've got teams full of players from Serie A and the Premier League and all the big leagues in Europe. So they're properly comparable teams that are comparable with the other top teams. Mm. And of course, the third factor is they're on their own continent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those three things together would suggest I'd almost be surprised if there wasn't an African semi-finalist.
Really, you think so?
There's also another horrible prospect as well. A few people I've spoken to, sort of reasonably well-informed, have said, if you want a dark horse, look at the USA. And I know we're supposed to be being very internationalist about this, but, you know, surely... Yeah, let's just... Can they just stay out of something for a change?
Well, I actually went to the game in Germany nearly 4 years ago when they drew with Italy. Fantastic game in... I can't remember what it was now.
Yeah,
pissed.
They played well.
They were very
unlucky not to beat the Italians.
Yeah, they played really well there. They're a decent side. And again, they're getting better and better, I think, because as football gets more and more highly developed, and they've got generations of kids now who've played it all the way through school.
That's right.
Mostly posh middle-class kids
there we are.
In America.
Could be your outside bet, though. So.
Yeah, there we are.
Yeah, I'm making note of all of this.
Well, talking of bets, Theo, why don't you let our listener... know what you've been up to, because you've been doing some wonderful adverts, commercials.
Yeah, as if you didn't know.
Well, I know. I have a vested interest. Yeah. I'm in them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm starring, but I'm in them.
I make a lot of TV commercials. At the moment, I'm making TV commercials for Betfair. I'm making a whole campaign. It's the Betfair front room. If you watch football on Sky or ITV, you'll have seen them. Five reprobates sitting around in a room talking bollocks about football, and I just film it and then cut them into commercials and other little films which you can see on the internet. One of these reprobates is none other than Mike Lee, sitting here before me. He's the Tottenham representative.
I got the gig. It's a beautiful thing.
I got him in.
You got him in, exactly. That's how it works.
Yeah.
It's who you know.
That's advertising.
Not what you know, it's who you know. but they've been very successful, haven't they?
They have gone down really well, and they are absolutely brilliant fun to do, because, I mean, what could be better than sitting around talking about football? So they've been great to do, and football fans like them, I think, because it's the real thing. Five real, genuine, authentic football fans who really give a fuck. And they're also, oh, blimey,
you just swore.
Sorry, mate.
Unbelievable. Don't worry, edit that later.
Okay. And but are also all very funny.
And the great thing, listeners out there, you can help me out because they have a website. I think it's betfairfootball.com/front-room. And they put you put the videos and stuff, and I've got to do this in blogs.
Yeah.
Add some comments agreeing to everything I say.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, no one is. Yeah. So, fans out there, Spurs Show listeners, go on that site and help me out and start agreeing with me. Yeah. I might be able to bump my feet up.
And watch the films, because they're a longer. The ads are very, very short necessarily, but the films are longer, and you get some funny. You get, there's some really good stuff on there with Mike and Robbie, who's the gooner. Mm. Mike has a really good line in very dry wind ups that gets Robbie going. But the whole thing, no, it's good. There's some good banter.
No, it is good. Say. Now, the other thing to move on, because obviously there was no Spurs game last week, is that Martin, who. He's been on the show before with the boys from White Hart Lane and the Spurs Miscellany, has got a brand new book out for Christmas, which is, and it's literally only £9.99. It is the Pocketbook of Spurs, available at visionsp.co.uk. We have it in front of us. It says, you know, Christmas stocking all over it. It really does. You can just see it shoved in there, end of the bed. People still do Christmas stockings,
but it's bulky to get shoved in a stocking. Well, yeah, you probably ladder stocking, it as well. Right? But, you know,
it's a big girl stocking.
Whatever, just buy it.
You know, so how did this come about? How did this? What was the thought behind it?
We were looking at trying to move on from the Miscellany series. There's been three editions of the Spurs Miscellany.
It's been three
sold
now.
Very, very well.
Really?
And we wanted to try and develop something which is a little bit more visual. So this is a little bit of a hark back to a kind of 1940s, 1950s.
Yeah, has that
50s
feel
to it. The old kind of boys' own annual, where lots of really nice original photos. There's a great picture in one of the history sections of after the 1921 Cup victory at Stamford Bridge, the Spurs team in an open-top sharabank with the FA Cup on the back seat, perched precariously, getting ready for their journey through the streets of London in the teeming rain, as it was that day. And they drove all the way back up from Chelsea through over the river and up the Seven Sisters Road in the open-top sharabank. So there's some great pictures like that.
And where'd you source some of those pictures from?
Most of them from the big photo libraries. Right. Some of the other images in there, there's a really nice little series of four kind of mini comic strips that are drawn by Bob Bond, and a big thank you to Bob. Bob used to draw the Roy of the Rovers cartoon strip.
Wow.
He was one of the teams that did that, so we've got amazing. Some Roy of the Rovers style stories with
the
story.
Who approached him? He's not a Spurs fan, is he? Or is it
I don't think he is. I think he keeps his cards very close to his chest on football, actually, but he's kind of in semi-retirement now, but he still keeps his hand in with all his illustrations, and he's done us some lovely little comic strips of there's a story that the tradition of the ribbons on the FA Cup actually comes from a Spurs director's wife who put some ribbons on the cup in 1921.
I'm on that
so
page
we've got
now.
That, and we've got
is that a true story?
It's absolutely, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. All the stuff in here is true. We don't make anything up, mate.
Well, I still get emails over the sick as a parrot thing.
We've got the sick as a parrot, and I mean that is up for grabs. I've had a few people. Norman Giller, the old Express sports writer, got in touch with me and said, "Oh, you know,
also did a book.
Yeah, we also did a book.
Lane of Dreams.
Lane of Dreams.
Yeah, great book.
But no, he said, "Oh, you know, there's other stories there." But you know, this is one of the stories, and we're kind of sticking to this claim.
I'm telling everyone now that Sick as a Parrot comes from the Tottenham.
Should we go over it again?
For listeners out there.
Spurs had a parrot for years, which the players won in a fancy dress competition on a tour back from South America. We were one of the first teams to go and play in South America in the early years of the last century. And the two players that won it were dressed as Robinson Crusoe and Man Friday, and they borrowed the ship's parrot for effect, and they won the competition. So the captain said, "Keep the parrot." So we kept the parrot, and it lived at White Hart Lane until the day, I think it was about 9 years later, when Arsenal cheated their way into the First Division, as we should never forget, at our expense due to some very dodgy goings on, allegedly. And on that day, the parrot keeled over and died. And that is, so the story goes, where the phrase "sick as a parrot" comes
and
from.
For those,
we are sticking to that
and
story.
For those overseas listeners, it was, I think it sort of came sort of Monty Python, Private Eye kind of thing with footballers when they're interviewed in the sort of 60s and 70s. "You lost the day, I'm as sick as a parrot." Yeah. It's a phrase that's just been in sort of general
common
sort of slang.
Common
parlance
football
for a while. It's going to be amazing if it's true.
So we've got a few little stories out there. We've also got a really nice little cartoon strip of the 4-4 at the Atmosphereless Zone last year, Spurs Arsenal game as well, with some great little sort of think bubbles and speech bubbles from the cloud, and Harry Redknapp shouting, "Get in, my son," at the end of it. That's the closest you're going to get to an impression tonight, people.
I love the what do you call that in the book industry, the first insider? Is it the that page, what's it called?
Inside Cover.
Is that a better name than that?
There must be a technical name.
There is a technical one. Inside Cover has got brilliant old sort of football stickers, Chas and Dave programme. I've got that one, the Cup Final tickets.
A few of them are mine. There's a few mates were kind of called in. We kind of got bits of badges.
Look at that. Tottenham Final, UEFA Cup Final first leg, 60p to get in.
You look at some of those ticket prices, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it?
Tottenham, UEFA Cup Final. Man City, £2.50. Wembley Stadium.
Yeah. No,
the one that I really like is
Tottenham Wolves UEFA Cup 72.
I was actually
50p to get in.
Well, the one that I really like on here is just on the left. There's a little one of those kind of petrol card stickers of Cyril Knowles, and my mate Bernie gave me this. He said I used to have this pinned up on my wall, and it's got in pen written underneath it. Nice one, Cyril! Exclamation mark! A little bit of customised sort of poster stuff there as well.
And that polyester V-neck jumper of the Wembley Stadium on the left. I had that as a kid. I used to work to school every single day after we won the cup.
They were
final.
Must-haves.
They were quality. I don't know why they don't make those great jumpers anymore. Really, it's a great book. So people get it at vsp.co.uk. It's $9.99.
You get it at a discount price. I think it's $7.99 if you order it direct from the VSP website.
Oh, well, there you are.
So, even better as a Christmas present.
And overseas people, can they get it from Amazon?
They can get it from Amazon, or they can order direct as well. I think the postage is a little bit more, but they can order direct from the Vision website too. So.
And it's in all good bookshops?
It is in all good bookshops,
Although we heard there's not many good bookshops left. We're talking off air. The Pally Borders is gone. You know?
Well, that's just that's only a what in America or just
here?
Because it's part, but it's only an offshoot of an American.
I think so. But no, it should be on the high street together with. I believe there are other clubs' pocketbooks available. But obviously, this is the better.
This is a very very handsome book. It's one of the most.
Well, thank you very much.
It's beautifully put together.
I mean, it does. You know, even though I say something. I mean, I wasn't the designer. I wrote the stuff, but it's a really nice looking book. And we wanted to do something a little bit more visual.
I just love the faded sellotape there. The sort of mock.
It's all done like a photo album. But a nice thing about it as well was that a miscellany was lots of little bite-sized chunks, and this gave us an opportunity to do, you know, there's nothing, you know, super long length in here, but just a few more slightly kind of extended explorations. And we've got a little feature on the Derby where I say, which, you know, possibly controversial, I posted about this on one of the Spurs websites, that there's a lot of hatred that underlies a lot of the great derbies in the world, but actually I think it's intense irritation that really symbolises the relationship between us and Arsenal. I know some people kind of take it a bit further, but you know, there isn't one area where it's either Tottenham or Arsenal or one community that follows that club or one class or one religion or anything like that. It's just it's a mix, and I do although I didn't love it this year, but I do love the whole occasion of the derby. I just wish we'd turn up sometimes and win the bloody thing, but
absolutely. And you've also got a forward by the great Ricky Veer has done the forward.
And that was really nice when I spoke to Ricky about doing the forward, and we kind of have a chat, and you know, he kind of agreed to do it, and you know, it's all genuine stuff that we've made up. And he said, you know, I do still always look for Spurs when I'm over here. He comes over quite a lot because obviously he's still got a place over here. And during the course of the conversation, we've got a little feature in here about the great goals, and I just chose 8 goals, maybe not the best ever goals that Spurs score, but just to symbolise an era of Spurs. And of course, one of them is that fantastic goal that Ricky scores in the 81 FA Cup final.
I can still visualise it when I was there.
Me too.
I was 14, I had the flu, to the game. I was level with the penalty area on the right hand side as you look at look at him scoring.
Yeah.
I still remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah. I was along the side out the other end, and all I kept shouting was, pass it! Yeah. Pass the ball! What are you doing?
That's what most of the players are passing as well, because you see, I think it's Crooks jerking his foot, and Archibald.
Crooks takes a kind of air kick at it
The amazing thing about those two games, looking back, you know, I know we're going back a few years here, but as I said, it feels like yesterday. The first game, we were awful, and at one down, I could not see us scoring.
No.
And that goal was like a goal from God, how Hutchison ran out the wall. As it hit him, he turned his shoulder, so
perfect.
It went past Colgan.
Perfect deflection.
And then the second game, where we started so well, scored in the first 5-6 minutes.
Ricky Vila,
again, a deflection. It fell at his feet after Archibald. And even to this day, when I watch reruns of the BBC One version, I think it was Loy McMenemy, one doing expert analysis, was going, it's offside, Archibald was offside. No, he wasn't. He wasn't offside. When the ball came back to Villa. And even that game when we were up, and then Steve
McKenzie scored that amazing goal. The one that everyone forgets. Because it was only the second best goal in the game.
Would have been one of the great cup final goals.
But then to go 2-1 down again behind, I again sat there going, I can't believe it that it's not going to happen for us.
Mm. Yeah.
And you, again, you couldn't really watch the game. And I know we hit the post, Hoddle and Cole can tip one over the bar. You couldn't see a scoring. You could, because they were behind the ball. And that Hoddle, that Hoddle stop.
Little dinking.
What's
pass.
They call it? I can't remember what Motson called it. Played a great stop ball over whatever it was.
Yeah.
And just boom and Crooks just sliding in.
But it was just a resilience in that. So, I mean, you know, I will bang on about this team all the time. We covered them in the Boys from White Hart Lane, which is the story of that early 80s team as well. It's still probably my personal favourite team of all time. But there's this view that, you know, Spurs have got a soft centre and we've done a lot to kind of perpetrate that over the last few years. But that side as well, as you say, you know, 2-1 down in the replay and the resilience that was shown to get back into that. Yeah. The City were a pretty good side as well. They were physical.
But only 20 minutes to go.
Skillful players, didn't they?
Absolutely.
They had a bit balance,
And they need to. I remember Chewett had that sort of scissor kick shot near the end. Dennis Chewett was getting on then, came on for City near the end and just put the ball
wide. The thing that was amazing about
that, Veer wasn't
defending,
was he? The
atmosphere was so different because, you know, there were, you know, it must have been about 88,000 Spurs fans in there on the Wednesday night in the replay. But I remember on the foot, because I only got a ticket
Thursday.
On
was
very,
on
very
Thursday?
Late. Yeah, it's Thursday night.
God, I'm sorry.
It went off as well,
very, very late. It did,
In the ground.
On
in the ground.
Before the original game. And
we
went up in the morning.
Game for your replay
ticket. Queued all night. But I can remember going down.
My brother queued for me. My brother's a QPR fan. I didn't have to queue at all. They just said, we got him. I said, oh, well done.
We did in the following year, though.
Well, we did it because we were too young to be in the pub all night, so we managed to get there before everybody else had kind of got out of the, you know, the major hangover. Mm. But I remember being interviewed by a Piccadilly radio on Wembley Way on the day of the original game, and me and my two mates from school, and they said, have you got anything to say? And we sang Spurs are on their way to Wembley down the microphone. But at the end of that game, because there'd never been a draw, I don't think, at a Wembley Cup final before. There wasn't
not
a first
Wembley.
Replay.
Chelsea
League. It was the first replay at Wembley. There'd been one other replay at the end of it.
It's Trafford, the whole ground looking around just going,
What happens now? Nobody knew what to do.
What is it now? It's FA Cup final. It's all done in one game.
It's all done on penalties, isn't it?
Even the FA Cup final. That's disgraceful.
Well, that's how Arsenal beat Man U the other year, wasn't it? After they bored them. They reverted to the old Arsenal. Do you remember? They killed the game and beat them on penalties.
Absolutely. I don't know if it's an age thing or not, but, you know, and I know the FA Cup is not as big as it used to be. It's not, is it?
No.
And for sort of, you know, younger people listening to the show, it was, A, we hadn't been there since 1967.
Well, not if you were our age, you couldn't remember at Tottenham.
Well,
I
hadn't been in my lifetime. I was born in 1967.
There were two days.
We hadn't been there since. Oh, sorry, tell a lie. What are we talking about? We've been there with the League Cup.
We hadn't been in
an FA Cup final since 1967.
When I was like two, and so were you. You were like one. So basically, the FA Cup was, there were two massive days in your life when you were a kid, you know, growing up then. Christmas Day and FA Cup Final Day. They were the big days that you looked forward to.
Used to be on both channels.
You woke up on FA Cup Final Day, you watched the build up right. You had your evening standard souvenir issue, which had all the details of all the players' wives, how they got there and all that. Then you watched it all on BBC and ITV. You flicked between the two, and
then it was special. It's back to BBC One.
Yeah, and you had all the different specials. Like they had, Cup Final, it's a knockout. They used to have that running race around the track before, and then they used to have the players' wives, which I particularly liked.
The night before. Who's up for the cup the night before Bramore and
all
ITV.
Of that stuff. I mean, it was a massive thing.
All the banners that you used to get.
If you're a Tottenham fan in the 70s and you were a kid, like a little kid, my first game was 71 when I was 5. Mm. So you go out through the 70s thinking, well, cup final day's the biggest day of the year apart from Christmas, but my team will never get to the cup final because Tottenham just don't get to. I can't even imagine it. I can't allow myself to imagine it.
It was a new generation, wasn't it? Because a lot of the teams that went in the 70s, you know, had the various cup finals. There was Europe, you know, then people that have been going in the 60s had, you know, a fantastic period. But, you know, we'd had the humiliation of relegation.
I
remember
in the mid to late 70s
in the school playground. And then we had, you know, the fantastic promotion season, signing Ozzie and Ricky, which was just the most incredible thing. I can still remember exactly where was that.
I also was in a game that day.
And then 2 years later, a cup final. And it's like we were back.
It's headline news on the news.
It's a new Spurs, you know.
Well, it was amazing.
Deal,
Here we are talking about the past again.
A bunch of
there's lots more of that in the podcast.
We'll go forward to the future.
Back to the future.
So anyway, honestly, out there, trust me. Can they even look at the book on Vision SP? There must be a lot of sort of.
There is a few spreads on there.
Get it. What are we now? We're mid November. Order it this week. You get it well in time for Christmas. Mm. On it, it's $7.99 VisionSP.co.uk.
Price of two pints.
And there Santa needs a bit of time to get the orders packed up.
Berno.
Yeah, we're going there afterwards, aren't
we? They're all in there. But it's a beautiful book, and I really, really highly recommend it. So just go and buy it. But let's do a competition. You're going to give away three copies of the book.
Yeah.
And can people out there, when you answer, can you put your name and address as well? And I haven't done that before. Put your name and address. I didn't email you back. You've won. What's your address? It's more work for me, to be quite honest. I don't want to do it.
It's a competition for
Send
you.
Your name Guess and address with the answer to this question, Martin.
Okay, Ricardo Villa wrote the foreword to this book. What club did Ricky sign for when he left Spurs?
I know immediately. I'm that
That's
sad.
A great question. I don't think I know that.
I do. I'll tell you off air. I'll tell you off air. Was that our dealers? No, it was him.
Yeah, it was Manchester United.
So there you are. What Argentinian team did Ricky Villa play for?
He didn't say Argentinian. He just said what team.
You've messed it up, haven't you?
Yeah, but then there's loads of Argentinian teams.
Well, it might be Argentinian.
He's only narrowed it down a bit.
Forget the Argentinian. Just what team did he sign for?
Which Argentinian team did Ricky look? Everyone's gone on Wikipedia. It's just a question of which email I pick out of Phil Cornwall's big feather cap.
Yeah.
That's how it works. It's the internet age.
That's
how it works. It's absolute luck. Some people still get it wrong. But anyway, which club did Ricky Villa play for when he was signed by Tottenham Hotspur in 1978? I'm looking at you. Was that 1978? Was it
78 is when he joined. But the question is,
but we've just changed the
Where did he go after he left Spurs?
Yeah.
That was what the question was.
Okay, start
in the show. Now we understand.
Now we understand.
Martin, what's the question so you can win a copy of this book?
Buggity Vino. Which team did Ricky Villa sign for after he left Spurs?
Okay, I know that as well. They are. Which team did Ricky Villa sign for after he left Spurs? Email us spursshow@gmail.com. The three emails, we literally put them in a big hat and pick them out before the show. We pick out, we'll get a free copy of the pocketbook of
Spurs. I've got to tell that, you know.
Are you doing any signings for this one? Are you bothering to do any signings?
I think there may be some coming up in the run up to Christmas.
So you'll sign these ones in the competition,
right? Yeah,
I'll
sign these ones. Yeah.
There you are. They're signed. Yeah. They're signed.
Yeah. Just for those people listening in black and white, though, it's very, very funny in here just now in the confusion over the question because I'm sitting here kind of shaking my head vigorously trying to make sure my headphones don't fall off and going, no, doing the kind of toilet sign. You know, it's all going wrong tonight. Shut up. I'm trying to do the question. You've got it wrong.
Hey, there we are, you see.
Fantastic.
This is why I don't
Slick
present
as
this
ever.
Quite, the quite this is why serious. I wasn't listening. The bloke who's presenting it. It's
this
great.
Is why I'm just the stooge over there normally. Anyway, there we are. While we're talking of books, again, a very quick mention because it's the same publishers to the Martin Chivers book, bigchiv.com. The book is doing extremely well thanks to the Spurs Show listeners out there. And he's got some more signings coming up. This Thursday at Blue Water Shopping Centre, Saturday at Wellham Garden City in Chelmsford. That's just a couple I've mentioned there. If you go to bigchiv.com and you live in those areas, check it out. And there's still a chance to meet Martin Chivers. And apparently hundreds of Spurs Show listeners have gone down there and met him and had the book signed. Go down there and meet the great Martin Chivers.
He's a lovely, lovely bloke, Martin.
Oh, amazing. What a, one of the greatest days of my life. Very quickly, a big thank you. We did do a shout out at the Spurs Show a few weeks ago for people just to send us stuff, just free stuff. Over there, I've got loads of chocolate.
Oh, that's
Swiss
nice.
Chocolate, which I should bring it out and have a little nibble on it. Ican Sunar sent the Spurs Show about 8 bars of the finest Swiss chocolate I've ever tasted.
Fantastic.
So Ican, thank you so much. What a beautiful thing. If you other people out there, you've got some product you want to push for Christmas, I mean, we're shameless. We're
or
whores.
Even just cash.
We're whores. Or cash. Money, whatever. Just send us stuff. Drop us an email, spursshow@gmail.com. Our show would say, and we'll just talk about it on air.
There we are. What happened about those DVDs I was trying to rustle up for you? Did you get that email?
I did get the email. Yeah. I've emailed him. Yeah, I have.
Okay.
I have. Absolutely.
So there's
something. Well, they did the Great Big Match, which is one of the greatest Spurs DVDs of recent years.
Yeah.
The Brian Moore compilation.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, we're meant to be having
there
a chat.
There could be
with them.
Listeners, there could be some DVDs on the way, could be some competitions.
Yeah, but it's nice to have free stuff for the listeners.
Of course.
I mean, they
is.
Have to endure the pain of listening to the show.
Of course, it is.
Every
at least we at least
give them
can
something
do
back.
Absolutely.
I thought that was Phil's Harry Redknapp impression coming back in again when he said, well, I'm talking about DVDs, I was not going to need that. They're in a garage.
Quite right.
I wondered if halfway through the question, I thought, oh no, he's trousered them, and I'm going to embarrass him here.
It's going to be better trousers and sucking bottoms again. It's all going to go very wrong.
Let's look forward, gentlemen, to... We're back. Premiership football's back. We're still fourth in the league. Let's not forget that. On Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're at home to Wigan Athletic. What do you reckon?
Doesn't sound quite right.
We've just been talking about 1981. Do you know where Wigan were in 1981?
Springfield Park.
Because I don't, but
Springfield Park.
Right, well, they certainly were nowhere near the Football League, were they?
They were
they were a rugby town.
Yeah.
They were an amateur club, weren't they? It's amazing. Anyway, still, nevertheless.
Their new manager seems to be making him play some relatively decent football.
The thing about Wigan is massively up and down. This is a team that has beaten Villa on the first day of the season at Villa, has beaten Chelsea convincingly at home, and has shipped five goals at Portsmouth, a team that have lost... You know, 85% of their game.
So you reckon they'll beat us on Sunday?
Anything could happen. Could thrash them, or we could be deeply embarrassed.
I mean, do we have any of our players back? Any of the injured players?
Well, we were talking about this, weren't we? We reckon Lennon's close, but Modric, we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Modric, I don't know.
Kudryashvili's got a late fitness test.
We haven't spoken about that.
Sorry.
We haven't spoken about Carlo Kudryashvili, who.
No,
I mean, look, we all said
all right.
We all said our thoughts. We all said him his thoughts, and thankfully, it was not as. As serious
exactly.
as it first came out.
Yeah.
But I have to ask, what is a professional player doing on a superbike going to the ground or away from the ground? It's not like I ride this at the weekend, Spurs don't know. I can't believe that no one at Spurs saw this huge.
Well, apparently he is in his contract, he's not allowed to do this. But
he must have been planning on rolling into the car park there, on it.
Yeah, what's that big noise?
Parks
it's
out
a
the
big
lane
motorbike, and here comes Carlo. I mean, really?
Accidents can happen anyway. I mean, I know motorbike riding is supposed to be a bit dangerous, but, you know, have you been out on Oxford Street this evening? It's murder out there, isn't it?
Yeah, but statistically, your motorbike, that's your worst... former
you do wonder, I suppose.
But so we need to get, you know, we need to get another backup keeper.
Probably.
Gomez,
what about the roaster, though? Is he really no good? I mean, we've not really seen him, have we? Bennett Anwick.
Anwick that we got from Sunderland.
I
think I saw him one in. Didn't he play in a European game?
And there's also Oscar Jensen. Is he on loan somewhere?
We've seen at least 20 goalkeepers out on loan.
Oscar Jensen. Sounds like a jazz
pianist. But you know, I get the official
sleep as they get into the penalty area.
Yeah.
I get those official texts from the club, which are usually. I don't know, I've lost track.
I've done.
If I knew, I'd probably cancel them.
Yeah, I think they're about pound a text.
But anyway, basically, well, that would account for what I'm about to say, which is they will send you the most unbelievably obscure information. But at least one in every three texts is young goalkeeper XX has joined Streatham on loan for 3 months. Literally, I mean, there's something like 10 goalkeepers out on loan, all young. Yeah. Anwick is the next in line. He's been on the bench recently. He was rated. He's played England under 21 when we got him from Sunderland. But of course, there was that scandal. You know, what happened the week we signed him. The ink wasn't even dry, and some film appeared on the internet of him and a couple of mates roasting a...
Can you say this? Roasting a chicken. There we are.
A lovely side of beef. I had to stop there. Mike gave me a quizzical look. We've all made mistakes in life. Let's give him another chance. He might be a lovely chicken.
They're keen amateur chefs.
Yeah. Anyway,
but we never seem to sort of bring on the, you know, it's the kind of younger players argument again as well, because already we're being linked with, you know, multi-million pound deals for other people who are kind of reserves as well.
Well, if you talk amongst yourself, I got an email about that which I've actually left on my desk.
I thought you were going to go down the path.
No, I've literally got an email. It will link in beautiful.
Talking of younger players,
he's left us in complete control. We can take over the world now, Theo.
I see an opportunity here to talk about the younger players who are doing it big time for other clubs. I'm thinking, first of all, John Bostock. Do you hear about him?
Well, Bostock, he's playing for the under-19s, isn't he? England under-19s.
He also went to Brentford on loan last weekend. First game, scored twice. The manager of Brentford has called him the Zinedine Zidane.
Fantastic.
Of League One.
I hope he comes through because I live in Lewisham. I live near kind of Crystal Palace, where it's more Millwall territory. But the amount of stick I'm getting off the cabbies around there about Bostock,
dodgy. He was injured, wasn't he, at the beginning? He did well pre-season, then he got an injury. I'm assuming they've sent him to Brentford just to toughen up and get some first team action. He's gone in there and he's absolutely dominated the game apparently, and just won it on his own.
Because I went to the Youth Cup final title at the end of last season.
Yeah.
Although we lost it to that other lot as well. I mean, people like Bostock and Dean Parrott, they did look really good. I think Danny Rose is
I think we've got some good young players. It's whether he brings them to.
Well, someone wrote in, I apologise to you, because you literally wrote in about 20 minutes before the show talking about this exact thing, about the reserve team and not really playing competitive football anymore.
Yeah.
Do you think it's sort of worthwhile? I mean, the thing is, I see Turat and these people in Bostock scoring two goals at the weekend.
Yeah.
Mm. I immediately go, they are good. Mm. Let's bring them back.
Yeah. Mm.
But what is the level of, you know, that whole thing between, are they good enough at Premiership football? Yeah. You won't know until you play them.
It's got to be a bad thing. I mean, I'm in favour of it's an old-fashioned idea, but, you know, put the reserves game on before the main game. Maybe, you know, extra value for the tickets.
They
probably
can't see that
pitch though, up or whatever, yeah. But it's just that they've got to be playing
Darren,
the
imagine Darren, the groundsman at Tottenham, if he listens. He won't be listening to this because I happen to know he's an Arsenal fan.
No.
But,
you're kidding me.
No. I filmed there years ago, and he's a lovely bloke and a brilliant groundsman. We won Pitch of the Year at least two out of the last 3 years, I think. He's really good.
Did they have like an awards dinner for that?
It's a proper
grass on the stage.
It's a very prestigious award in the groundsman's world.
Pitch of the Year.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but he's done a great job there, because when I first filmed there, it was the turn of the century. And the pitch, I don't know if you remember, but it always used to have a very nasty ball patch in one of the corners. And the reason was, he told me very bitterly, he'd only just got the job. The head guy had retired or gone somewhere else. And he was very young at the time. And he said, I've got this
job. Put out to seed.
Hey! Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Anyway, he said, look, this is an impossible job, because the way Sugar's had these stands built, there's a certain part of the pitch that never ever gets sun. Wherever the sun is, it never gets it. I've got no chance.
Put some extra seats in, didn't he?
But now, he did. But now they've got those brilliant ultraviolet lights, of course. Mm. And Darren has sorted it out so much so that we have the best pitch in the Premier League.
Amazing. Well, but he told me also.
Well, he told me also. I said, "Where were you before you were here? Before you got this job?" He said, "I was the deputy." And I said, "And where were you?" No, that's right. That's right. He wasn't the deputy there. He said, "I was the deputy at another club." So I said, "What club?" And he went, "I don't really want to say." I said, "Not the Goons." And he went, "Yeah." And I said, "You're not a gooner, are you?" And he went, "Well, yeah."
Wow.
Exposed. Outed. Unless, that's 10 years ago, he might have come round, I don't know.
People do. Yeah. Tony Parks, he was a gooner when he was a kid and was converted to the Tottenham way.
Yeah, I don't want to, you know, he's a great groundsman and a good bloke. But he told me with his own mouth,
there we are,
I am a goon.
We've got an email here, and this is just Charlie Dent is resident. I'm an overly emotional binge drinking Spurs loving president of Washington Premier FC, a fantastic little football club in Tacoma, Washington.
Great.
I'm writing to you because I have no friends in London, and I feel I know you lot through the many podcasts I listen to since the Martin Yole era. I'm just busting with joy to tell someone near North London that my sons and I are coming to the lane to see Spurs beat West Ham on December 28th. Better still, we managed to get tickets to Craven Cottage on Boxing Day 2, so we get a double amount of games in over the Christmas break. This will be the first and certainly the only time we get to visit the lane, so I want to make most of the entire Monday leading up to the match. If you and me in town from America with two sons, and know this will be a religious experience for the three of us in Eastern, how would you spend your day leading up to the match? The boys are 17 and 11 and both footballers. Should we visit a local pub near the ground? Probably not. Anyway, it's a lovely Charlie Dent. Someone coming over from, you know, the other side of the world. The first Tottenham baptism.
We
get a lot of these
like
emails.
Yeah, no, I love them.
And you think, I don't drink around the ground anymore.
Nobody.
I mean, I used to go to the one near Bruce Grove. What was that pub called? The little one. By the park. There you are, you see.
The
I don't know
homes?
Anymore. The which one?
Antwerp.
Yeah, the Antwerp.
That was a decent old pub.
Yeah, I used to go to the Antwerp.
It used to take about a week to get served in there.
That's the same with them all. That's the problem, isn't it?
So anyway, what we'll do, I'll tell you what, guys. People who sort of go drinking in the ground, you know, bear in mind, they're from America. The boys are 17-11, so I don't know, is 11 old around a pub?
Not really. There's that one. What's the one on the corner? The corner flag has got a guard.
The corner pin's for foreign fans, isn't it? Isn't the corner pin?
Well, they've all got memberships. I mean, probably the best place is just to get in is the Irish Centre.
Yeah, that's
over
good.
The back opposite White Hart Lane Station.
Yeah. Because that's quite big.
Social club, yeah.
There's a lot of space.
I don't know that
Haringey
one.
Irish
yeah,
Centre,
just
yeah.
up White Hart Lane and near the station, yeah.
Well, there you are. Irish Centre by White Hart Lane Station. If anyone out there has some suggestions where to take a 17, 11-year-old to the first game. I mean, we're playing West Ham. I know it's not the friendliest game to go
no,
to.
So, no.
You'll but certainly then, get the atmosphere.
Yeah, oh, yeah, there'll be atmosphere.
Great game. Fulham very genteel. I always go to Craven Cottage. Love going
well,
there.
Fulham's always nice. There's
Fulham,
a lot of really nice
great
pubs
grounds.
To drink in and you've got all those
there's even lovely restaurants around
Fulham,
there.
Fulham, there's some great pubs. Anywhere around sidewalk. Fulham and Chelsea, not a problem at all. Tottenham, I find it very difficult to recommend
well, since,
places.
Since the Tasty Tater's gone in the High Road, there's really nowhere with like really good cuisine. That's
yeah,
that's
and that great cafe that used to be by the West Stand.
And the King Samantha Fox used to have well, that bar as well, didn't she?
Yeah, well, that's, I think is that it's now called Latinos or something. Oh, I don't know what it's called this week. But
no, there, we can listen. Let's face it. Let's give it to him straight. There is nowhere you would recommend, certainly to eat. Forget it.
San Marco. That's where I go.
Where is that?
San Marco, right by Bruce Grove Station.
Is that a little one under the bridge?
The Italian restaurant.
That's an okay Italian. I've heard of.
No, I go there every game. We go there every game. I don't know if it'll be open over Christmas. It might not be. But Charlie, Google the San Marco and you get a nice bit of food before. And if it is open, I'll have a drink with you there myself. There we are. Can't say fairer than that.
No.
Gentlemen, so predictions for Sunday?
I think we'll win by the odd goal.
I think we'll, I mean, you know, unless Wigan have one of their incredible days where they turn into something else, which could happen.
I like that figure. Is it Figueroa, their fullback? I like him.
Yeah,
Leggy,
and they've also
he?
Got Roddy Jaeger, who's a very useful striker. Yeah, they've got one or two good players, and they play good football. But we should turn them over.
Of course, I mean, Palacios used to play for them.
Yeah, we've got better. I mean, we should absolutely turn them over. And unless they really turn up, we could actually, you know, see them off quite comfortably. Well,
mentioning Palacios, I mean, I don't know whether he's not
gone off
fit
the boil
or whether sort of stuff in it. Somebody, I think it was on the Harry Hotspur
he's got too
blog.
Much to do.
He said, yeah, he's got too much to do. He said it's a bit like going to a hotel. The guy comes down, he checks your bags in, he checks you in, he carries them upstairs, he changes the bed linen, he cleans the room, he cooks your dinner, and by that time he's naked. No wonder. Exactly. But that might be it. I mean, I love him to bits. I think he's a fantastic signing.
Like
seems like from all accounts, really.
The thing
really
about
nice
him
guy.
Is when he turned up. I think I said on here, I might have said. It that he is one of those players that Tottenham fans we always want a Palacios. We're always saying, why haven't we got anyone in there winning the ball, toughing it out in midfield, being the strong man? Why haven't we got a Graham Roberts? Why haven't we got a Dave McKay? Although Dave McKay was another level altogether. And then they usually turn up, and then you think, brilliant, we've got it. I mean, I'm thinking Sherwood was a bit like that, certainly Freund seemed like he was going to be like that, and then we always end up going off them. And the reason why we end up going off them is because of the things they can't do. And the thing about Palacios, people sort of turned a blind eye to it first few months. He can't really pass,
but
he gives the ball away a lot.
In fairness though, what I like about him is he gets the ball, and well, I think now Modric has been injured, he doesn't have that just a very little 4-yard pass to Modric or whatever on the left hand side. We know, we've said this every single week, we're missing Modric desperately.
Yeah, it was a silk and steel in midfield,
absolutely.
Wasn't it really, Modric?
And I hope needed. Not in a bad way, but you know, obviously Robbie will be playing on Wednesday. You think against Wigan, start with Crouch and Defoe.
Yeah,
they work so well for Portsmouth together. Don't play this three up front.
Well, and there's also hope that Defoe's back into form as well, you know, after his
but it didn't work against
stamp.
Sunderland, let's face it. No, we were very, very lucky to beat Sunderland a few weeks ago. It doesn't work.
I met Crouch and Defoe the other day.
Did
I tell
you
about that?
No.
I was filming with them.
You talked about this, but I'll tell you the story.
Top blokes. Well, I can't say much about it because the film won't come out till the new year, but I filmed with Crouch and Defoe and Gareth Barry and Sean Wright Phillips, and not only are they all top blokes, but they can all act.
Really?
It was almost spooky. It's like they'd been... what was that famous acting teacher who did The Method?
Stanislavski.
It's like they'd done that.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, I had no time with them at all. I gave them about 2 minutes worth of notes, set them off. Brilliant. And Crouch and Defoe, I mean, obviously
Crouch always seems like quite an interesting guy, actually.
But, he is. I know his dad because he works in advertising. He's a top creative director in advertising, also an absolutely top geezer. Really nice guy. And Peter was a lovely guy, but Jermaine Defoe also absolutely.
Were you a bit starstruck?
Well, I haven't got time to be star-trek when they turn up, because you only get them for a very set amount of time. So I have to go straight into it, work, tell them what to do, get them there, and just keep the whole thing moving. So I'm star-struck. immediately before and immediately afterwards. As they walked away, I look at them and kind of wave in slow motion. They've gone. They can't see me. And I'm going, bye, Jermaine and Peter. I love you. They don't see that, fortunately. They only see me doing the directing bit when I'm being professional. But I'm not just saying it. They were top, top blokes.
Oh, that's lovely.
Really impressive and really nice guys.
And they're both score on Sunday. You heard it here first on the Spurs show.
Yeah.
There we are, gentlemen. Theo, thank you so much. Martin, thank you so much.
Good
luck with the book. I know it's going to do extremely well. I think hopefully Phil will be back here next week. I think next week our guest is Hairdresser to the Stars, Nicky Clark. Nicky Clark.
No way.
Next Tuesday.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. Spurs boys.
Can we nip him for a short back and
side? Yeah, I was just going to say, my eyebrows need doing.
Nicky Clark in his leather trousers next Tuesday.
Watch out for that squeaky.
His bum.
Amazing, isn't it? There we are. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. Email us, spursshow@gmail.com. Email us if you want to sponsor the show. And don't forget the competition. And see you next week.
Ta-da.
On you, Spurs. Ta-da. This week's Spurs show was celebrating Rick Johnson's 60th birthday. And also thanks to the Pocketbook of Spurs by Martin Cloak, crammed full of rare pictures, exclusive illustrations, and the history of the Lilywhites. Available now at visionsp.co.uk. This is a Playback Media production. To listen to all our football podcasts, visit playbackmedia.co.uk.